Joyce Chaplin is a Harvard history professor who has written a comprehensive account of the history of circumnavigation and how it has shaped the ways we think about the Earth, the environment, and ourselves. The book is Round About the Earth, Circumnavigation from Magellan to Orbit. Joyce Chaplin is the prize-winning author of The First Scientific American, Benjamin Franklin and the Pursuit of Genius, and a frequent reviewer for the New York Times Book Review. She looks at the entire 500-year history of going around the world from Magellan, the Portuguese explorer, to Magellan, the GPS. It's a great pleasure to welcome Joyce Chaplin to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Joe.
What brought you to this subject initially, to look at circumnavigation?
A coincidence. I was spending some time at sea on a tall sailing ship going from Bermuda to Nova Scotia, and I'd brought along to read a copy of Jules Verne, Around the World in 80 Days. Mm. And it was that contrast between kind of reenacting or experiencing the age of sail and then reading about the age of steam, when you could go around the world in what seemed like then, at the end of the 19th century, an incredibly fast 80 days. And I was just curious about that measure. How long does it take to get around the planet? What kind of technology do you use if you want to go quickly, if you're willing to go slowly? And once I got back on land, I wanted to read a history of around-the-world travel, and because there wasn't one, I went ahead and wrote one.
Here is a book, Around the World in 80 Days. It was published in 1872, and obviously this is a huge history. This has been going on. Our fascination with it has been happening for a long time.
Almost 500 years. Magellan's expedition departed in 1519, and the survivors came back in 1522. So we're about 10 years short of a full 500-year history.
And with five centuries, I assume, and you certainly get the sense in the book, that there are a lot of characters in that. There's a lot of people to write about.
Too many for me to actually fit in. So especially from the late 18th century onward, a lot of people go around the world, probably more than could even be tracked. I think some of them eventually just left no record of what they did. So it goes from being one of the hardest things to do to being quite easy to being something where, because it's getting too easy, people start doing it the hard way in some other kind of way. So, yeah, the book really has two levels. There are all of the stories of the different people, as well as animals and robots that go around the world. But then there's one story of how the people who've gone around the world have thought about their place or their significance in relation to the planet and have written about that so that we all think about that. So it's a lot of stories, but it tells one story.
I would like to talk about the connection to the Earth in just a moment, but let us go back to the earliest maritime explorers of Ferdinand Magellan and Francis Drake and how they fit into this picture of kind of starting it all.
Well, Magellan started it without knowing it. He hadn't intended to do a circumnavigation. When he goes out, he wants to go to the Spice Islands, what we would call Indonesia, sneaking up on the Portuguese spice trade there. And it isn't until Magellan is killed, having crossed the Pacific Ocean, and then his survivors get to Indonesia, and they realize they've gone most of the way around the world. There's no point going back the same way, so they continue on and they do the first circumnavigation. And it's so difficult. Only 35 of the original 275 men come back. Only one of five of the ships that set out. And that's so difficult and remains so difficult that the next really successful circumnavigation isn't for 50 years, when Francis Drake goes out in the 1570s.
You present the book in an interesting fashion. It is a geodrama, as you call it, in three acts: fear, confidence, and doubt. Mm. What allowed you to present it in that way, in this three-act style?
Well, I thought of it as a geodrama because it is a way in which people think of themselves as taking action in relation to the whole Earth. And going around the world is the longest tradition in human history of doing something in relation to the entire planet. So, geodrama. The first act is fear because so many people died. More people die in the attempt of going around the world than survive it. For about the first 250 years, So from Magellan's first expedition down through the late 18th century, when finally circumnavigators who take out ships decide that keeping the crew alive should be a real priority. it hadn't been before then, so really it made sense that people who went around the world before the late 18th century, before the late 1700s, would do so with a sense of fear.
When did the confidence start to come in?
The confidence starts at the late 18th century when, again, naval commanders decide that some effort should be put into provisioning, picking routes that would let men get to land early and often. So that helps. And then by the early 19th century, with the consolidation of European empires, it makes it easier for ships to make land, to get to port, to get food and water, and to repair ships. When steam engines are introduced and used for ocean travel and eventually for railroad travel, that makes it even faster and easier to go around the world. So the confidence really builds over the 19th century as the technology becomes better for travel, as things like the Suez Canal and the railroads are used to transform even the land over which people travel, and as empires, again, really consolidate their hold on certain territories, which makes it easier, I should specify, for certain populations to go around the world, not for everyone. But that does give a sense of confidence.
And then followed by doubt.
Doubt. This is where we probably are now. I mean, I think a lot of people who go around the world continue to benefit from that sense of confidence. You know, we have commercial travel available if you can buy an around-the-world airline ticket and if you can get a passport and the right visas. It's not hard to go around the world, though, again, it's not universal. There are a lot of people who can't afford to do that. But I think at this point, the doubt comes in with renewed fears about what it means to take on the planet. Early aviation had fatalities, and that was a reminder that it wasn't always easy to develop new technology to take on the entire world. And then spaceflight, going into orbit, incredibly difficult, expensive, and sometimes dangerous. And those are all reminders that mortality, which we thought we had kind of beat in the 19th century, we hadn't, at least for all kinds of global technologies. And then there's a kind of environmental realization that certainly burning fuel to go around the entire world is probably not good for the planet. And this represents not only going around the world, but all the kinds of global activities that are probably creating climate change. That's a big sense of doubt that we have now.
Joyce Chaplin is the James Duncan Phillips Professor of History at Harvard University. The new book is Round About the Earth, and it is published by Simon & Schuster. You write in the book, circumnavigators' long and self-aware tradition of engagement with the planet questions our sense of uniqueness and may teach us something worth knowing about why we think of the Earth the way we do. How so?
Because I think that people who are aware that we're in a moment of planetary crisis, especially with climate change, but also with other damaging things that we've done to the environment on a global scale, that consciousness of this moment of crisis can leave us feeling isolated, as if this is unique, people have never had to think about this before. And in some ways, that's true. There are dimensions of the environmental crisis that are completely unprecedented. But I think it may be helpful to look at all the people in the past who have really thought of themselves in relation to the planet. What is one person in relation to the planet? What is human technology in relation to the planet? And the 500-year history of circumnavigation is probably the longest tradition in which you see a kind of unbroken set of realizations about how human beings have thought of themselves on a planetary scale.
You make the point that even the early circumnavigators who would become sick and suffered from scurvy would think about a cure in relationship to the land, of getting back to the land. And this is something that we even see as part of space travel, that we have these a moment of weightlessness, that the strangeness of that will be remedied by returning to Earth.
Yes. The early mariners were convinced that it was being away from land that gave them scurvy. And if they got back to land, just being on the land, or if you couldn't be there for a while, burying yourself in it, in the earth, those were therapies that would help you get over scurvy. they're not completely wrong, but it is rather imprecise that obviously they needed stuff from terrestrial land that contained vitamin C, but they didn't think about it that way. But it was a problem for them because going around the world means crossing so many oceans in the age of sail, they were away from land for a long time, and that was tremendously debilitating for their crews. It's interesting that one of the former directors of NASA has compared what happens to the human body under conditions of weightlessness, has compared that to scurvy, to say that just as the Royal Navy beat scurvy by finding things that would combat it, so we will have to come up with therapies that take care of the human body when it's away from Earth. It's still very difficult to maintain health if you're in orbit for a long time. People have to exercise continuously, really, to kind of give their muscles and bone enough resistance to mimic some of the effects of gravity on Earth. But it's clear that away from Earth, away from gravity's effects, we're not, as humans, we're in conditions that we're really not adapted to.
When you talk about this not just being a human endeavor of circumnavigation, that once it is done, then we start to have fun with it, right? We start to riff on it a bit. And I assume that would be an enjoyable part of the research as well.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing the ways in which people have made their way around the world testing all kinds of new devices or social conditions. So the first person to bicycle around the world does that in the 1890s. On what was called a penny farthing, one of those bicycles with an enormous front wheel. So mm-hmm. You can just imagine him going into places where no one had ever seen a bicycle, and there he is wheeling along. And eventually people will take motorcycles. They will sail alone around the world. That's also done for the first time at the end of the 19th century. And eventually go around the world with unusual companions. So early aviators, when they were flying around the world alone, liked to take a kind of mascot. It must have been incredibly comforting, mile after mile on your own, to have something small and furry in the cockpit with you. It must have been a kind of comfort to have that company, even if you were technically flying alone. So yes, the variation of the experience and the desire for novelty is really quite striking.
You did mention that you thought we were in a period of doubt right now. And I learned long ago not to ask historians about the future. But I'm interested into your thoughts as to where we are headed when it comes to this, of that, will that doubt erode at some point?
You're right. As a historian, I am not used to predicting the future. And I think the big question is the doubt going to be the last act of geodrama? We've gone through fear, confidence, and now we end with doubt? Can we really ever have a new phase of confidence or just comfortable awareness about where we belong on Earth and what we do in relation to it? We're not at that stage yet. We're at a real kind of impasse in terms of space travel, where it's a big question. Are we going to go back into space beyond orbit? I think the last episode of going around the world would, believe it or not, be a manned space station on the moon, because the moon is the object that has gone around the world the longest. It's the sort of outer limit of being in orbit. So once somebody goes around the world on the moon, does that 27.3-day circuit, then we're done, and we would probably be looking to go elsewhere, perhaps to Mars. But it does seem like this is not a moment where we can confidently say, right, that's going to happen. I just don't think we're in that period of time yet.
We started off our discussion by talking about Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days. So it reminds us of the fascination that we have. And I assume that will be ongoing for centuries to come, this fascination and this lure to go around the world, to travel from one place to another and to make that full circle.
Yes, there is something that seems satisfying about doing it. It has that full planetary swoop, and it has all that history behind it, where people who go around the world, even if they use commercial aircraft, they feel like they're part of a tradition and that has a kind of meaning. I think there are probably ways in which that kind of human adventure could develop differently. It'd be very interesting to set up a virtual around the world tour that a lot of people would participate in. You know, you could check in with one point on Earth, with people who would tell you, if you were there, this is what you would be doing now, this is what you would be seeing, and then you would move along and see another place on Earth, doing it all remotely via kind of electronic media. That would be a very interesting way to do it, and it'd be more participatory, where a lot of people could feel like they're involved in that, representing themselves and representing the planet to others.
So we do have this circumnavigation by proxy going on.
Yes, that's a long, long tradition. You know, most people actually don't go around the world, though we all know what that means, and that's because other people have represented it to us. But a lot of circumnavigation was made by people, and then eventually animals, and now robots, satellites, that do it for us. That they're doing some kind of proxy tour in order to test a way of going around the world, or simply to do reporting of it, as, say, polar orbiting satellites do, to kind of take a set of snapshots of the Earth to tell us, well, what's it like? What are the weather patterns? What are the alterations in climate? And, of course, it would be kind of crazy to have a human being up there taking those snapshots, but a satellite can do it very easily.
You mentioned early on that you were looking for a history of around-the-world travel, and you didn't find any, so you wrote one. And in what challenges did that pose of not having anything else really to rely on?
I did have to figure out what it meant. I didn't want to create a catalog or an encyclopedia, and then there was this circumnavigation, and then there was this circumnavigation. I just thought people wouldn't be interested in that. So I wanted to try to figure out, well, why does it seem distinctive? What makes it different from other long-distance travel? And it is that sense of planetary consciousness that people going around the world had, that they really thought of themselves in relation to this enormous orb that they can't see all at once. At least at the start. Astronauts have now done that. But there would have been a definite sense, even early on in the 1500s, that people said, okay, here's where we were. And you see, even in the 16th century, in the 1500s, globes and world maps that are marked with the entire track of a circumnavigation. And that's the sort of longest way in which people have marked a planetary activity on visible representations of the world. So it was figuring that out, that not only have people been doing this for a long time, but they thought it had very particular meanings, and it gave them that planetary consciousness. And again, I think this might be very helpful for us to think about at a moment when we're intensely conscious of the planet and the environmental crisis. Well, it might be helpful to understand what people have thought about that before.
And it seems that maybe we should have thought of this a long time ago, though, right?
Planetary consciousness?
Yeah.
Well, again, I think people were. And it is very interesting that even early on, with people going around the world in steam vessels, either on the ocean or steam trains, and then early aviators, they really start commenting on what different parts of the Earth look like. Where you can see what would be called the built environment. You know, it's transformed so much by the human hand that it doesn't look natural anymore. And people say they comment on the spread of that, and they're kind of ambivalent about, well, where's the green? Why doesn't this look natural anymore? Is this a sign of advancement in human civilization or not? So there's a very long, I think, set of commentaries on that. But as well, you know, going back to the earliest phase of geodrama, the fear, there's a long, long tradition of our thinking of ourselves as being too small to do anything to the planet. You know, it's too big. We couldn't possibly individually or collectively make a dent in it. Well, this may be wrong, but it's a long, long history, and we really have to confront that in order to say, well, that period of time really is over, and we can't have this assumption anymore.
It's a fascinating book. It's Round About the Earth. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Joyce Chaplin, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you so much, and best of luck in your work.
Many thanks, Joe.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Round About the Earth, Circumnavigation from Magellan to Orbit. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.